Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm great.
Good.
Good. What shall we talk about today?
Well, how about conscious, compassionate awareness?
You know, I've heard that somewhere before.
It's a good thing, isn't it?
It is a good thing.
Yeah, you know, we talk about this, Sherry's going to be here and there, and this is what's going to be happening, and I'm here, and it's happening. I was just in Manhattan last night at the Integral Yoga Institute, and we had a great time, at least I did. It seemed like other people had a great time, too, and that's what we talked about, conscious, compassionate awareness. It, you know, the talk was titled something else, but heck. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to be in Cambridge, and the talk has some title, but we'll talk about conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yes.
And that, and we'll just continue like that.
That's so great.
Yeah. It's, you know, what I heard myself talking about last night is, and this won't be a surprise to you, but, you know, that not suffering is our essential nature.
Yeah.
You know, who we are is not suffering. Suffering is something that's added later. And then, because it gets added so thoroughly, we think it's who we are.
Yeah.
And then we start doing a lot of work to try to change ourselves and fix ourselves and improve ourselves so that we can become the people that we should be so that we won't suffer. And it's just so much easier than that. It's really a matter of turning our attention to conscious, compassionate awareness, and all that suffering just falls away. So I think it's worthy of talking about at least 52 times a year.
At least one lifetime.
That's right.
Great. It sounds like you had a great time last night.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful place. If people are in the city and are looking for a great group of people with whom to practice yoga, that's I would definitely recommend that group.
Great.
Yeah, it was very fun.
Hey, I wanted to give the time and location for your talk tomorrow night in Cambridge.
Yes, that would be nice.
Again, that's tomorrow, Wednesday, April 19th. You'll be at the Cambridge Friends Meeting House. Address is 5 Longfellow Park. It's right near Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the talk is Unconditional Self-Acceptance.
And I always love being in friends' meeting houses.
Yes.
Now, you want to talk about a good energy place to be. It always feels like coming home.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's all good. I'm excited about that. And right now I'm in one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life, called Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's being lovely.
Great, great. And the time for tomorrow night's talk is 7 to 9 p.m.
Okay. I'll be there.
You'll be there. Great. Sherry, we have a caller.
As it should be, huh?
As it should be. I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry and Michael.
Good evening.
Hi,
Paul.
Good evening. As it should be, huh?
As it should be.
And as it is, huh?
And as it is, you know, it's hard to have a call-in talk radio show if people don't call in and talk.
I feel so fortunate to be able to do so.
Well, good. I feel fortunate as well.
Right.
So what is going on that we should talk about this evening?
I am hot on the trail of a mystery.
Hmm. I love mysteries.
Yeah, I'm I guess one of the things I'm getting from spiritual practice is a love of mysteries, and,
yes.
And my life is full of them.
Yes, mysteries and puzzles and all of those things that aren't easy and aren't the way we thought they were or
yeah.
were told they should be, all those kinds of things in life.
Yeah, yeah, the things that just aren't the way that I thought they were. So here's what I have. I've noticed that the things that I enjoy the most, I seem to enjoy them when there's really no point other than just enjoying them.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, it became most apparent to me in looking at when I dance tango or when I do drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm just really not, I don't know, I'm not trying to achieve anything or impress anybody, or I'm just there, it's really fabulous.
Just doing what you're doing for the sheer enjoyment of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we could say would just be a great way to live life, period.
Yes. Yes.
We have this conditioned confusion, don't we? That there is something about life that we're supposed to be doing or getting or
yes.
being.
Yes.
And it's something other than how we are and where we are and what we're doing and how it is.
Uh-huh.
So there's always this tension and this struggle between what is and that belief that it should be something different.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be able to relax into life and just be alive and just enjoying that
right.
is really quite remarkable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So here's where I get hooked, or I do it these days anyway, is... I'm starting a new company in a field that I've been interested in for a while, but I've never really done before. And sometimes when I'm kind of researching or learning about this, it's really fun. But then sometimes I feel like I'm spinning my wheels and I'm not really getting any closer to being able to make a profession out of this. In other words, make money to pay my bills.
Uh-huh.
So I can go into it and have a lot of fun. However, there's also this piece where I need to be kind of doing something with it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just be playing around all the time.
And so I'm hearing in that a belief that if you're really doing something, then it needs to not be play and not be fun. It needs to be something different from that for it to be important or real or meaningful or...
No, it could be fun. Yeah, it could be playful. It's just that I look at where I am and sort of my trajectory, and I'm not seeing a trajectory that leads to an income.
Uh-huh. And so what would be required for it to lead to an income?
The best I can figure is that I need to find some kind of advice or mentoring or something like that, because I'm really not sure.
Okay, so you there's this field that you're interested in,
yeah.
and an idea that you have about a business in that field.
Yeah.
And you've done a fair amount of research, it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
But you don't know what the steps are to turn this interest into something that's going to generate income for you.
Yes, that's right. And also along those lines, there's like this side of me that kind of says, like, but I should know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I should be able to do this, and I really shouldn't need to go and get any help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a huge part of conditioning, isn't it? I've never done this before, but I should know how.
Yeah.
I shouldn't need any help. There's really something wrong with me if I don't already know what I, in fact, don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you know, I always suspect that that's there to make sure that we stay in a position of not knowing, of not getting the assistance and the mentoring that we need to be successful, so that we will fail, so that the voices can say, see?
Yeah.
See? I told you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you going to do?
I know some people, so I'm starting to talk to people and get ideas for how I might move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the same time I'm trying to reconnect with why I got interested in this field in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Because is there a danger that this focus on turning it into income-generating activities interferes with your ability to enjoy it?
I can't tell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It may actually make it more enjoyable.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so I'm wondering if the talking with people, maybe finding some mentoring and advice people, maybe older, wiser types, could be seen as just the next step rather than being something that you're doing that's going to lead to.
Mm. Mm. So in other words, it's just what I would do now, but without an expectation of where I go after.
That's right. Mm. So if you're dancing the tango,
yeah,
I'm imagining that you had to learn to do this.
Yes.
So you had to find somebody who knew how to do it, who could teach you.
Yes.
And I wish I knew more about it, because I'm sure that there's a, you know, you're going along and you can do this thing, but now you need to learn to do that thing.
Uh-huh.
Whatever is the next thing. And if you need to learn to do that because it's going to mean something, because when you learn to do that, then maybe you'll start competing, or you could then make a living teaching it. Or that's very different from this is the next thing that I want to learn, because this is going to take me to the next place I want to be in dancing the tango.
Huh. Now, so you touched on something now that fascinated me, is, so if I'm learning the tango and thinking, but this is something that down the line I could learn how to teach, how does that get me in trouble? Because that sort of rings a bell.
Yeah, because it's now you're no longer just doing it for the love of doing it.
Mm.
It's very different when you're doing it for the love of doing it, and suddenly somebody says, would you teach me how to do that? You know, I'd be happy to pay you for your time, but I would love it if you would teach me to do that.
Uh-huh.
That's very different from, I'm going to learn to do this, and I'm going to learn to do it well enough that I can hang out my shingle, and people will pay me to teach them.
Uh-huh.
And that attitude of mind and heart, the difference between those two, I suspect, is often the difference between enjoying something and not enjoying something.
Huh.
Now, it doesn't mean that you can't pursue something with the, you know, with the ultimate goal of making your living from it.
Right.
But if that becomes the reason to do it,
uh-huh,
then very often I think the fun goes out of it.
Huh.
Just something to consider.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, how does the fun go out of it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that is going to be a really important place for you to look, isn't it, as you move forward?
Yeah.
Does it turn into something with standards and pressure and shoulds and that attitude of, well, you should already know how to do this,
right,
rather than, wow, this is really interesting. You know, I want to talk to everybody that I can get my hands on who knows something about this, because I just want to know everything there is to know about it.
Yeah.
One, to me, feels very open. The other is a process of starting to close down, because I have these standards and I have these expectations, and I need to perform in a certain way, and it all means something.
Yeah.
And what it means is something other than just doing it for the love of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, standards and meaning. And
so you let us know as you go along, okay?
Yeah, that sounds good. Great.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much, Sherry.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. The phone lines are open here. If you'd like to join our conversation, we have a new toll-free number. That number is 866-613-1612. Again, that's toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. That phone number is also on the webpage there that you're listening to. And if you're calling from further away, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. We welcome callers from anywhere in the world. Sherry, I have an email question here.
All right.
Hi, Michael and Sherry. I am having trouble meditating. Every time I meditate, I cry. Also, I keep getting headaches and pressure around the top of my nose when I get back into practice. Can you help? From a listener in England.
Well, I don't know. But I was going along swimmingly right up until that question.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's kind of what Paul was talking about. You know, the first part of it is just sort of what's going on. You know, I'm having trouble meditating. Whenever I sit down, I start crying. I have this pressure at the top of my, you know, it's all just, wow, that is really interesting. And I watch myself have a lot of things that I'd like to discuss about that. And then, can you help? Suddenly, things start getting smaller. It's, about helping, about fixing, about changing, about something other than just looking at this. Now, maybe not. Could be just, you know, polling people who have some experience with this because the writer is just really interested in what's going on. But when, of course, when the conversation begins with, I'm having trouble meditating, you know, we can suspect that there's already an angle to
yes.
the whole thing.
Yes.
So with that in mind, I would encourage the writer to go back to an attitude of mind of, isn't this interesting?
Uh-huh.
If it didn't mean anything, for instance, if I sat down to meditate because I've heard meditating is interesting and, you know, it helps me be more present and in the moment and aware and that sort of thing, and that's great. And if the person teaching me said, and you know, anything might happen when you sit down. You might just start laughing. You might fall asleep. You might, you know, might find yourself crying. You might get a little sick at your stomach. You know, maybe your back will hurt. All kinds of things can happen. So, you know, just sit down and notice. Then when the tears start, that's fine. You know, because the person said that this could happen.
Yeah.
But if I sit down and I have an idea about the way it should go, and part of my idea about the way it should go is not crying or pain at the top of my nose or any of these kinds of things, then the meaning with that is there's something wrong. This, you know, it shouldn't be like this. And often what follows that is, I don't like this. I don't want this to be happening. It's scary to me. You know, there's something wrong here. Excuse me. So if we can see all of those attitudes and beliefs for what they are, attitudes and beliefs, then we can get back to a place of, well, now this is really interesting. You know, I might even say, you know, I've never heard of that. I've never heard of anybody sitting down to meditate and crying. So, I wonder what this is about. I wonder what's going on. And with that attitude of mind, first of all will be revealed. Second of all, it's going to serve the person very well throughout a career of meditating and living.
Yeah.
Because that is the attitude of mind that makes life interesting and exciting, and again, as Paul was mentioning, you know, it's the mystery, it's the adventure. What is this? Wow, what's going on here? Huh, that's interesting. Wow, I never saw it that way. Wow, that's fascinating. And when we stay in that attitude of mind, It's you know, it's kind of like being a child again, and life is endlessly entertaining and fascinating and exciting. When we get into, I know how this is supposed to be, and of course we rarely question who knows that, but I know how this is supposed to be, and this isn't it, this isn't right, there's something wrong. We start closing down, and life ceases to be fun in a big hurry.
Yes. I hear as you're talking the standards that we maintain about how life is, how it should be, how I'm doing.
Yeah.
And we
almost never question the person who holds those standards. You know, we almost never ask, how do you know that? What if that's not true? Why do you think that? Why do you believe that? You know, we just hear that reaction from conditioning. This isn't right. There's something wrong. I mean, what? Crying, that's, you know, but sit down to meditate and start crying, that's not okay. And we just go along with the assessment, and in a case like that, what we find ourselves doing pretty quickly is not meditating.
Yes.
And, you know, it happens with so many things. Meditation, that's a really interesting one, of course, for me. But it happens with things like stuff that goes on in the body, just walking around. So there, I have a pain somewhere, and I turn to conditioning to give me information about what that means and what I should do and how I should feel about it. And
yeah.
We almost never stop and say, that's really interesting. I wonder what that is. You know, it's pain. There's something wrong with it. I need to get away from it. It means something bad and scary. I don't want to go there. If we put our attention to it, we find just example after example after example, all day long, every day, where we turn to conditioning and it says the equivalent of, there's something wrong, and we just start backpedaling to try to get away from it.
Yes. I've heard you talking about in the body before, and I think one idea you suggested is asking the body what's going on,
mm-hmm.
rather than turning to conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I wish that our sort of knee-jerk reaction to everything that happens in life is to sit down and be still and pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a pain. Oh, okay. Well, I need to just sit here and be with that. I want to really feel that and get a sense of where it is and let the body give me information about what it means,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing, instead of, oh, God, I need to get out of here. I need to get away from this.
Yes. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Phone lines are open here if you'd like to join us today. The number is toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. Sherry, I have another email question here.
All right. If those phone lines aren't ringing, I hope that you have plenty of those.
I have a couple more here.
Oh, good, because otherwise, you know, people who want them to be emailing in as you're reading there so that we have a supply.
Yes. Gasho, Sherry. I'm uncertain about the difference between being kind to myself and being self-indulgent. For example, when I, quote, take it easy, unquote, how do I know whether I am looking after myself or avoiding participation? When I decide not to, quote, push, unquote, myself, how do I know whether I am serving ego or my true nature? What confounds this question is that self-hate is always accusing me of not doing enough, not being enough, not participating, not going after what I really want, etc. Self-hate takes me out of present moment clarity and creates these questions in the first place. So, of course, the answer is to let go of self-hate. The problem is that I can see and hear self-hate, and sometimes I can drop it, but it is so insidious and persistent that it sneaks up and takes over my consciousness, putting me in a state of anxiety that can last for days. What is the best trick you know of for breaking the lock of persistent self-hate? From a listener.
Well, of course, the first thing that I always recommend, well, there are two things that I recommend. One is reading There's Nothing Wrong With You, which I suspect this person has done, using the language of self-hate like that. The second thing is to go to a retreat that's focused on seeing self-hate for what it is and giving some tools for working with it. The third thing is, this question is just so perfect. It's just so right there with the first step, and that is that we need to learn to pay attention. You know, how do I know if it's this or that? How can I tell if it's coming from that or from that? That's it. That's why we practice awareness. That's why we meditate, so that we can have a sense of where things are coming from. Not so that we can know, but so that we can have a sense about where things are coming from. So, of course, now, when I say what I'm going to say, I want people to hear this not as a contest, not as anything extreme, but very, very basic and very subtle. And what we begin to do as we practice being aware, watching the process as best we can, is not to do what the voices say we must do, have to do, should do, and to do what the voices say we shouldn't do, can't do.
I see.
Okay?
Yes.
So that's a great place to start. So, it's back to meditation, for example. I'm going to meditate, and the voices come up with 1,000 reasons that I shouldn't, that I can't. I'm too busy, it's too boring, it's unproductive, it's whatever it is. Okay, that's the thing to do. Okay. So what would be the other side of the equation? So I meditate, and the voices don't want me to. They want me to
participate.
Well, what they want me to do usually is eat stuff that isn't good for me.
Right, right.
They want me to stay up and watch TV instead of getting enough sleep. They want me not to go to the gym. They want, okay?
Yeah.
So all of those things that they're attempting to talk me into, those are the things that I'm not going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I would like to go to a workshop. Oh, no, there's not enough time. That's the thing I'm going to do. Okay, when the voices say, just lie there on the couch. Just lie there on the couch. You really need the rest. They're a little too enthusiastic about that. I'll get up and do the things that will actually take care of me.
Yes.
Yeah. So bottom line is, whatever those voices are angling for, go in the opposite direction. The yes. voices are the voices of conditioning. They're the voices of suffering, of the illusion of being separate from life, and we don't want to follow them. Now, after you do that for a while, of course, they'll start their little reverse psychology thing. But by then, if a person has been watching enough that they go into reverse psychology, that person is pretty well prepared for whatever's going to happen next.
Yes, yes. So sounds like what you're saying is challenging the voices on all sides.
Yeah. I can't remember. It seems like I talked about this on this show recently, but the woman that I used to work with who... the voices would never let her read. She loved to read, but they would never let her read. And And so, you know, she had to do this and she had to do that. She had, it was just this endless list of things. And when she got through the endless list of things, she could read. But until then, she wasn't allowed to read. And I said, every time they start in, sit down and read.
Wow.
Sit down and read until they stop. You get up and they start in again, sit down and read until they stop.
Wow.
She got a lot of reading in. And she also was able to move past the tyranny of the voices.
Yes.
Until she could choose for herself. And, of course, the example that I always use, or the comparison that I always make, is if you had a child you love, you know, what are the kinds of choices that you would make? You wouldn't let the child eat ice cream all day long every day, but you also wouldn't say you can never have ice cream in your whole entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so things would be balanced. You know, there's time for exercise and to get enough sleep and to do the things that you enjoy and to be responsible. And when we're present and we're making our choices out of kindness and compassion, there's room for everything. There's room for resting, and there's room for participating, because life is perfectly balanced.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm. My pleasure.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Michael from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Good to talk to you, too. The second time Michael said the phone lines were open, I said, well, I'm going to call in.
There you go.
Well, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity. I want to report on something that happened last week with me, and it was a really big thing for my awareness practice. My son, well, I was going to say close relatives, it was my son, had been extremely distressed one day, and the next day I saw him, and he was, we were in the same room together, and he was sitting and watching television eating, and I was going to ask him a question about his health, and before the words even got out of my mouth, got just furious with me and yelled at me, and it was kind of incoherent, but he said something to the effect, I want to have the last word. And then the voices, the things that came up inside me were all these self-defensive comments, like I was just going to ask how you're doing, you know, but I didn't say anything. And then, I just went on, and later as I thought about it, I realized that everything that came up inside me was just some kind of self-conditioning that was concerned about defending itself, like making statements like, well, I was just going to ask about your health and blah, blah, blah. And then it dawned on me there was no concern whatsoever, really, for anything that was going on with him, other than I had enough awareness to not say anything.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't say anything, which at the time was, and he, you know, but it was just looking back on the whole thing, I could, without noodling, is the word you use, without noodling any of it, I could just see the whole thing. including the fact that there was no... it reminds me of what you said about when Ram Dass had his stroke. He said he had not one dharmic thought.
And yet you were obviously there and very present and paying attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one thing that you heard him say is, I just want to have the last word.
Exactly.
and you gave him that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, what I find so interesting later on that is the voices of self-hate will come in and tell me that I didn't handle it well.
Yeah, you know, sure. You should have said something.
That is just so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the conditioning. There's no way you're going to win with conditioning. I don't care. It appears that no matter what I do, there's a critical voice in my head that's going to say, well, you know,
you
really could have done better there.
That's right, and that is such an important awareness. If as long as you're trying to please that voice that cannot be pleased, life is going to be very unfulfilling.
Yeah, and that's that seems to me to be something that I think that once again it's insidious. You get into a loop chasing your tail trying to think about that because it has to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we're conditioned to think that, oh, we should get this and never have to deal with it again.
That's right.
But every time it comes up, it's brand new.
Yeah, and that's why I love so much that Is That So?
Is That So, yeah.
You know, because you're never going to win, whether it says you did a great job or you blew it for the whateverest time. Is That So?
Is That So?
Yeah. That's great. Now, I'm curious, did he ever say anything to you like,
no,
a good job or thanks
no,
for shutting
no,
up?
No,
or?
He didn't. No, he didn't. I'm trying to be
trying to be what?
Philosophical about being a parent. I said to somebody the other day, it's one of those thankless tasks.
Yes. Well, of course, you can thank the parent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can say, good job, Dad.
Yep, I sure can.
That was amazing. That might have been a stroke or something or other, but good job. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Sherry, I have a question I want to ask you. A couple of times over the past year or so, a woman, one of our Sangha members named Rebecca from Austin has called in, and she's involved with political activities, and she has expressed fascination with bringing awareness practice to the political process where you get involved, and it doesn't have to be us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you have been involved in any kind of conferences that look at that, or you know of anything that's going on around that. I find that given the particularly the stress in our country now over the war in Iraq that it seems like it's gotten so polarized.
Yeah. Well, polarized. It does seem that. On every level, our culture gets more so all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know of any group that is particularly focused on that kind of work. I'm sure they're out there. I just don't happen to know what they are. Maybe there are other people listening in who do and could point us in that direction. For me. It's enough for me to be able to do this practice just within myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And not to get polarized within myself, and you know, kind of in the way that you just described.
Yeah.
And then not to get on the opposite side of an issue with people close to me and like that. And I suspect that. Ultimately, you know, that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah.
Practicing with ourselves, with our families, with our communities, and allow it to spread in that way. But if there are people out there who know of particular work like this, I'd love to hear about it too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just that.
Yeah.
You know, the difficulty is, I go back to Paul. You know, the difficulty is we start into a process like that, and almost immediately we latch on to an outcome.
Yeah.
Instead of us just getting together, maybe exploring different perspectives and how we got to those different perspectives, we immediately go into it, because if we could resolve this, then we could get on the same, we could solve these problems that we have.
Yeah. I went to a retreat last summer, a four-day retreat, led by a fellow whose number of books I had read, and this sounds like the most unsafe environment in the world, but it turned out not to be. We came together, and it was a complete, anybody could talk about anything, and there were no rules. And I think that only worked because the entire group of people were drawn there by an interest in this fellow's books.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I don't know, but, well, I do know, because we all expressed it to each other at the end. But at the end of the 4 days, it was just amazing how close we were felt to each other.
Uh-huh.
And there were some really upsetting things that were happening during that week.
Just because there was that permission and that acceptance.
Yeah, so it sounds like exactly the opposite of the safe environment we set up at Sangha, but it was...
But it comes to the same thing, doesn't it?
Well, it did. Because people were, well, at least I was, were extremely responsible about how we behaved.
Well, and with Sangha, there's that privileged environment. So people can say anything that they want to say and be however they are.
Yeah.
And there is the acceptance within that. I mean, that's the whole point of it.
Well, in this environment, anybody could say anything to anybody they wanted to, which is could be quite dangerous.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Unless you have acceptance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the acceptance would be the constant in the two situations, right? One seemingly completely unstructured, the other very structured, but both with the same underlying guidelines or rules.
Yeah.
There is acceptance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for allowing me to call in, and I sometimes feel like I'm going home and reporting to Mommy what happened at school today, but nonetheless, it's...
Well, if you just remember who Mommy is and who you're talking to and who this is for, then that's all great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. You can reach us toll-free in North America. The phone number is 866-613-1612. We have a couple minutes left here in today's show, and we'd love to have you call in and join us. Sherry, I have another email question here.
All right.
From a listener in Pennsylvania. Gasho Sherry, you responded to my plight about being stuck inside a horror movie where self-hate is constantly hooking me into the story of how terrible I am and how terrible it is, and there is no way out. The flip side is the hero movie where I am wonderful. In both cases, I am the center of the universe. Following this back upstream, I can see how being an only child with a bipolar father really reinforced these karmic stories. The biggest horror in the film is that I am hopelessly mentally ill. (Parentheses) I have been diagnosed as bipolar. (End parentheses) And it's getting worse. As you said, the whole problem is that I believe it. I believe the horror story and the diagnosis. I can step back and see these two stories and how they play my life, but I can't get unstuck from them. What specific steps can I take to get beyond these stories and not be sucked more and more into them? Gasho from a listener.
Well, see, it's not true. The whole thing is not true.
Uh-huh.
Because the person who wrote that is not stuck in the story.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. It's as simple and it's as difficult as that. There's a person who buys into it, believes it, is living in a horror story, steps out of it, can see, oh, that's a horror story, and can see all of the story around that story, how it started, why it's there, and is constantly going back and forth, pulled into it, believing it, living it. It's the only reality. Stepped out of it. There it is. It's a story. It's a nightmare. I can see it for what it is, pulled back into it. And what the person who is writing that wants us to believe is that it's a constant thing. But it's not a constant thing. So,
In other words, the story is not constant.
That's right. It's a subtle and interesting thing. If I'm living in a nightmare, and that's all there is, it's not a nightmare. It's just my life.
I see.
I have to come out of that and be in another reality to look at that and say, that's a nightmare.
I see.
When I'm out of it, looking at it, naming it, I'm not in it.
Yes.
So the interesting thing is that there's somebody who is not in it wanting to claim that nightmare as the only reality.
Uh-huh.
And so just on a, I don't know what we would say, just on a practical, a level of physics, you know, that sort of thing, it's just, it doesn't work. It's not true.
Yeah.
So with that kind of situation, to me, the difficulty is always with the person, that person who is not participating but wants people to believe that they are participating and that that reality is the only reality and it's real and true and that person is stuck there, but they're not stuck there. If they were stuck there, they wouldn't be talking about it. They'd be living it.
Yes. Yes. So that perspective of being stepped back allows you to see the story for what it is.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, we often talk about disidentification, and that's, of course, what's always a requirement. If I am in the story and believing it, then that's my whole reality, and that's what's real, and that's what's true, and that's one level of suffering. Okay,
that's
true. I mean, I am not saying ignorance is bliss. There's certainly, when people are identified in a nightmare, it's a nightmarish experience.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the person steps out and says, "Whoa, that's a nightmare. I can see that that's a nightmare."
Yes.
And then there's the person who says, yes, it's a nightmare, and it's your life, and you're stuck in it. That's the person who is the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is not the nightmare. The problem is not the person who's living in the nightmare. The problem certainly isn't the person who steps back and says, wow, I spend a lot of time living in a nightmare.
Yes.
The problem is with the one who wants it to be the only reality. The problem is with the one who wants to suffer over it.
Yes. Yes.
It's
I can see
very,
that.
It's very, very subtle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I can see it in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for each of us listening to turn the attention inward and to see how that is so for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just thinking about this very process the other day. One of the things that has long fascinated me is that I talk to a lot of people who are struggling. Now, it's not that I think everybody isn't struggling, because I think pretty much people are struggling.
Yeah.
At least if the Buddha, got it right at all, people are struggling, but people don't always talk about it. Not all people talk about their struggles. In fact, most people go to great lengths to hide their struggles. But people talk to me, so I hear about a lot of struggles that are going on, and pretty severe struggles that are going on. And people will stay in situations that are making them absolutely miserable. People will stay in situations and contemplate suicide. People will stay in situations and attempt suicide. And that's really fascinating to me as a process, because one would think that when we got very, very miserable, we would say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. If I stay here, I think I'm going to kill myself, and so I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be in this relationship. I don't want to be in this job. I don't want to live here. I don't want to be this person any longer. So I'm going to go somewhere else and be somebody else.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of logical, isn't it?
Yes.
And I'm pretty convinced, now this would be a great discussion to have at some point if we had enough people who wanted to discuss it. I'm convinced that the reason people don't do that is the player that I was pointing at with that last email.
Yes.
It's the person who says, yes, your life is hell, and you have to stay here in it because that's all there is for you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The person who says, your life is hell, and this is the only option for you.
That's right. And you have to stay in it just exactly the way it is. And if you kill yourself, well, that's just proof that you are a coward and a loser.
Yes.
And what almost everybody is missing is the person who says, okay, if you're that unhappy, let's do something.
Yes.
You know, what do you want to do? What do you want to change? You know, we can do anything. You're what matters in this. You're what's important.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So what we're missing is the part who says, the part who cares about us and is willing to take care of us and make a change.
That's right. Willing to do anything. Anything to take care of us.
Yes.
Not in a self-indulgent way. Back to the other email. Not in a, okay, you're having a hard time, we'll quit your job. That's that other voice. That's that same player on the other side of the duality slide. You know, oh, well, you're having a hard time in your relationship. Well, leave it. You don't like your job? Well, quit. It's
right.
Not that.
Right.
It's the person who says, we can work this out. We can figure out something that's going to be compassionate for everyone involved. You don't have to suffer like this. We can work this out.
I can get excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe other people find themselves occasionally in that place and would like to call in next week and
or whenever
we do this again.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
I hear the music, Michael. Thank you.
Yes.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Good night.
Good night.